This is Eco Radio KC, a locally produced exploration of positive solutions to the ecological challenges we face as we work to create a healthier future for our community and the planet.
Good evening, and thank you for tuning into Eco Radio. On tonight's program, host Richard Mabian welcomes back Eric Kirkendall of the MOCAN Clean Air Coalition, and Leticia and Ryan DeCagney to discuss serious air quality concerns in the Argentine neighborhood of Kansas City, Kansas. Also, Jale Erickson of Heartland Conservation Alliance brings some Independence residents to discuss the fight to preserve 44 acres of wild wilderness from development. But first, I'm Natural E with your headline news. KansasCity.com reports, a divided Supreme Court on Monday ruled the Environmental Protection Agency must take cost into account when deciding whether to regulate mercury and other toxics emitted from coal-burning power plants. The Supreme Court's decision overturns a major piece of Obama's environmental agenda, but it's not clear how much of a practical impact it's going to have. The court's decision also could affect future EPA rules, forcing the agency to consider the expense when deciding whether to regulate. More than 20 states, including Missouri, joined in the challenge to the EPA. From the other side, the Attorney General for 16 states, including California and North Carolina, rallied behind the EPA. Mercury emissions from power plants fall into water and accumulate in fish, while other toxins like arsenic and hydrochloric acid also poison the environment and endanger public health. Regulators estimate strict emissions controls can prevent between 4,200 and 11,000 premature deaths and 4,700 non-fatal heart attacks annually. BBC.com reports, a Dutch court has ordered the government to cut greenhouse gas emissions by at least 25% by 2020 in a case environmentalists hope will set a precedent for other countries. In terms of the practical implementation, the government has already agreed to close coal plants, increase the use of windmills and solar energy, and drastically reduce gas extractions in the north of the country. The court case puts pressure on the government to speed up the process in order to meet the targets and become more energy efficient within the next 5 years. And finally, TheGuardian.com reports, she is one of the world's most high-profile social activists and a ferocious critic of 21st century capitalism. He is one of the Pope's most senior aides and a professor of climate change economics. But this week, the secular radical will join forces with the Catholic cardinal in the latest move by Pope Francis to shift the debate on global warming. Naomi Klein and Cardinal Peter Turkson are to lead a high-level conference on the environment, bringing together churchmen, scientists, and activists to debate climate change action. Klein, who campaigns for an overhaul of the global financial system to tackle climate change, told The Observer she was surprised but delighted to receive the invitation from Turkson's office. Release of the document earlier this month thrust the pontiff to the center of the global debate on climate change as he berated politicians for creating a system that serves wealthy countries at the expense of the poorest. Activists and religious leaders will gather in Rome on Sunday, marching through the Eternal City before the Vatican welcomes campaigners to the conference, which will focus on the UN's impending climate change summit. While the upcoming conference is centered on the Pope's encyclical, delegates will also be looking ahead to decisive international meetings this year. Before the Paris talks comes a UN summit, where states are due to commit to sustainable developmental goals, which will inevitably affect the environment. And at this time, I'd like to welcome Richard to the mic.
Thank you, Lady. Hello, everyone. It's been a little while since I've been on since I've hosted a show. If I didn't have guests, I could spend the next hour just talking about how nice it is to be back and how much I've been missed being here and tell you how much we need to be talking about. So maybe in this month coming up, I'll be on two or three times. So we'll have a chance to talk to each other and share some information with one another. There's a lot going on. That issue that just came down with EPA and that mercury problem is very serious as far as I'm concerned. And I'm going to do what I can to find a way to get someone in here to talk to us about that and what we can expect and what, if any, plans they have to address that issue. I mean, that's almost as, you know, that was a major decision that the courts made of sending that back to EPA. But before we go, before I talk to my original program that I have for you tonight, we had a situation that popped up. For some reason, Mike and I, we just have this tendency to see something and get all turned on about it. I mean, I was all the way in another state, and he called and told me about it. So it has to do with something that's going on here in Kansas City. And even though we're just going to have him here for a few minutes to make you aware of what's going on, we thought that was the best way to bring it to your attention. The thing that caught my attention was that it said, stop the destruction of 44 acres of wildlife refuge at 23, whatever that means. I think the stop the destruction of the 44 acres is what captivated my attention. So what we do, I got three people sitting here, and we only have a few minutes to do this. And I only have a few minutes to do it. But I'm going to turn this over to a good friend of mine, Jill Eckerson, and who is the program manager for that Heartland program that you heard mentioned, and let her do the introductions, and then we'll let this fine gentleman sitting next to me explain to us in a short time what it is that's going on. Jill?
Richard, thank you so much. So I am the program manager for the Heartland Conservation Alliance. We are a small grassroots organization that's working in the metro area to protect natural areas. So we want to protect places that people love. And we do that because those natural areas provide benefits to all of us that are very, very important. I read recently that most children's first introduction to nature in cities is through television. So think about that, especially all those listeners out there that spent times growing up walking through the woods and splashing in a creek and having their first interaction with nature to be such a positive one. And so we were contacted actually by some residents in Independence, Missouri that live in a neighborhood that has 44 acres that is for sale. And right now it's zoned residential, but the city is considering to rezone it as light industrial. And so I've asked Susan Huntoon and Kurt Manley to come in and share their story. Kurt, you want to tell a little bit about why you think the City Council of Independence should not approve this rezoning?
Sure, Jill. Thank you so much. The property is at 23rd Street in Blue Ridge area. My name's Kurt Manley. I own property directly across the street from it. And several other homeowners right in my area are against this plan. It's been a green area for a long time. It's acreage with massive oak trees, white oaks, that are indigenous to Missouri. I was told by the Conservation Department, there are 150-plus-year-old trees. That's why I bought my property in 1994. And it's a beautiful area, and we're just very concerned because a landfill is not suited for this area. It's not suited for inside city limits, and strongly recommend City Council vote against it because the area is designated residential. And I believe they should stick to that plan because that's the way it was zoned originally.
Okay. So if I'm hearing you correctly, you're going to be going to a city hall meeting. And so basically what would be beneficial if those people who are listening that live in the Independence area, is that basically who we need? The people who live in the Independence area, and I know some of you out there listening because you listen to the show, be aware of the fact that this is going on, and that if I heard you correctly, there's some homeowners in the area that are not in favor of this particular solution being used. You said landfill, they're going to turn it into a landfill, and then they're going to go into light industrial. Did I hear you say
yes.
that? And right now, it's just kind of a nature kind of deal. Just
absolutely. It's acreage right along Blue Ridge 23rd corridor. It's beautiful area, and a developer out of Northmore, Lance Houston, wants to turn it into a landfill. First, he already stated he wants to scrape the topsoil off so he can sell it He wants to grind the trees so he can sell his mulch. And then he wants to charge other people besides his excavating company fees so they can dump there also. There was no definite plan for monitoring this landfill other than he stated he would have his employees look over it.
Okay, so, those of you out there listening, understand we did not have them here for a program, and we will bring them back because there's a lot of questions I'd like to ask about it personally myself. But this particular reason that we have them on is to make you aware of the fact that this is going on and that they're reaching out to the American public, to the Kansas City, the independence people living in the independence area to say they would appreciate your giving them some help. Now, what we need to do now is talk about how people can make contact with you. Is there some number that they can reach you? Do you have a centralized location or something like that?
If anybody wants to reach me, my number is 816-836-9766. And also I strongly urge for people in the Blue Summit, Western Independence, Kansas City area, to call the city council members of Independence and state that they're dead against this.
Is this a local company that's wanting to buy this, or this one coming from out of state?
We understand he operates out of Northmore, Missouri, which is just out of Riverside.
Okay.
I was just going to say, if anybody wants to contact Heartland Conservation Alliance, they can also call Jill Erickson at 816-813-0944. And I do believe, Kurt, isn't it true that there's a change.org notice that folks can go and register there to sign the petition?
This is, yes, Mike Murphy. We did post that on KKFI's website on the Eco Radio, and we also posted it on our Facebook page, Eco Radio KC's Facebook page, a link to that. And I just really quick want to ask you, so there, are you looking for people to attend the city council meeting?
Yes.
And that, and you want to give the specifics about that as well?
Yeah, it's July 6th at, do you know?
5:30. We'd like them there at
5:30 p.m. We'd like them there early if we can to organize. We strongly encourage signs against this, any verbal protesting. There's nothing wrong with people speaking out. That's what the city council meetings are for. They will give concerned citizens a chance to speak their piece. At the appropriate time, they will announce, and you can go up and say yay or nay against it.
Okay. Gio, how did you get involved? Well, I got about a couple of minutes here. But
I was contacted by landowners, and that's the role that Heartland Conservation Alliance plays in the community. We are an advocate, and we build collaboration. So we want to work with the city. We want to work through the processes. One of the reasons we're involved is because we think open space is so important, mm-hmm. especially in the urban core and especially in this part of Independence. This is a part of the community that would benefit so much. There's a creek that runs through the property. So our interest in protecting the natural resources is really where we put our hat in the ring.
Well, I'm glad to see you doing what you're doing. And you know, folks, we're talking about, again, about citizens that are looking into certain circumstances that's going on in their own community that they want to have a hand in it. You have a number there for us?
Yes. Also, Susan Huntoon has been working strongly against this proposed plan. She can be reached at 816-832-8912. And she's been very, very strong against this and doing a fine job trying to fight these people.
Okay, well, I have to go, but before I do, I'm going to say to all of you, Jill, you with your organization, and even you two, I'd like to have you back sometime where we can sit and take the time to talk about this, regardless of what goes on at this session. Even if it doesn't go your way, it'd be really good to have a conversation to talk about your options and all those kind of deals. And you know, I'd love to be able to sit down and talk to you about your organization. That's a must anyhow. Thank you for coming
Thank
in.
You, Richard.
We appreciate you. We're going to take a break
Thanks,
here.
Thanks, Richard.
We'll be back with you with a whole different crew in just a second. Thank you.
Supporting 90.1 FM, prizes, performances, productions, and more. The largest Latino event of the summer is coming to the Kansas City Convention Center. The National Council of La Raza's National Latino Family Expo will provide interactive demonstrations, entertainment, and will provide health screenings for the whole family. This happens from July 11th to the 13th at the Kansas City Convention Center. For all information, 913-353-6257 or at nclr.org/events.
Hi, I'm Dr. Laura Basha, and I'm the author of The Inward Outlook. Next time on New Dimensions, I'll be talking about the things we can't talk about.
New Dimensions airs at 5 a.m. on Tuesdays.
I'm Dr. Anthony Lizowitz, and this is Climate Connections. As legalized medical and recreational marijuana continues to spread across the United States, the environmental impact could be huge. To create perfect growing conditions for their crops, indoor marijuana farmers currently use as much electricity as 2 million average U.S. homes. And some illegal growers use highly polluting gas generators rather than plugging into the grid. But Gina Warren of Texas A&M Law School says legalizing marijuana may also be an opportunity.
Policymakers have a unique opportunity to incorporate climate risk assessments into their state marijuana licensing schemes and to require indoor growers to use only climate-friendly energy generation.
But there are challenges. Some states, such as Colorado, do not yet currently generate enough clean energy for growers to rely on renewables. In cases like this, Warren suggests a carbon fee combined with a requirement that growers increase their use of renewable energy as it becomes available. And since only 4 states have legalized recreational marijuana so far, she says there's still time for other states to develop policies to make the grass greener on their side of the fence. Climate Connections is produced by the Yale Center for Environmental Communication. Learn more at yaleclimateconnections.org.
All right, gang, I'm back. I'm about to be surprised. No, you wouldn't. Y'all been around me for a little while. You know that I keep things jumping here in this studio. I've completely changed the faces that's sitting in front of me. Not so much the story, because it also has to do with citizen scientists. I have my favorite group on that started back with the Bucket Brigade folks. I don't even know how long ago it's been. I mean, time goes by so fast when you're having fun, you have a tendency to kind of forget it. But I'm here today because I think there's a call for celebration. This group I'm sitting with here with Eric and Leticia and Brian, and they have really been working their behinds off. I'm very proud of the things that they've been able to accomplish. Usually I sit around a room and with my chest stuck out like a proud papa, I tell them, and just watch them work. The other two people that are involved that aren't here is my personal scientist and friend, Craig Ballant, and my other personal friend, Judy Ansel, which is a favorite here at the station. I'm going to kick out the number because there may be some of you who might want to make a comment to some of the things that's going on. So if you hear something happening that you would like to call in to make a comment about or address, dial in at 816-931-5534. 816-931-5534. I don't know how many of you read the Kansas City Star this morning. If you did, you would have seen a front page article that talked about worry is in the air around the KCK rail yard. As soon as some of you who listened to my show saw that, you should have immediately thought about this group that's sitting in here with me right now, because this is, I can't even begin to number how many times they've been here, and we've been explaining to you all along the way what it was that we wanted to do out there in Argentina dealing with Burlington Northern Santa Fe Railroad. This is dealing with the diesel emission and how we wanted to be able to address that issue because of the new carcinogen that was being labeled on the use of diesel fuel. Well, if you didn't see the article, take your time to see it. You can even go find it online. And you will see that Last week we had a meeting, and in that meeting we had a chance to finally explain the results of all the testing we've been doing. And I mean, it was a very well put together meeting, very professionally done. And I think all of you would have been proud to know that we had these kind of citizens in the Kansas City metropolitan area. So we're here tonight kind of celebrating, and I let folks talk about what we were able to accomplish and let you hear it in their own words. I'm starting out here with Eric Kirkendall, who was the person who originally reached out and met me. And then Leticia DeCaney, who was the person that I originally reached out to contact. And from there, this program, this effort got started to what we've been able to accomplish. So, Eric, I'll let you say a few words to kind of get us rolling here, if you would.
Yeah, and maybe 60 seconds of background would be good. Kansas City's long been a freight city. It's getting more that way. Railroads are going to a hub-and-spoke system where they ship freight, mostly imports from China, by rail, then put them on trucks. Some railroads have decided Kansas City is the place to put them on trucks. So we are getting a lot more goods transport through here, a lot more railroad activity, a lot more trucking. All of that means more diesel, which is very dangerous, short-term health risk, long-term health risk, bad for young people, bad for babies, bad for adults.
I think that that's very important, especially when I sit and think about what just happened today with EPA, with that mercury concern, with the prevailing attitude in big business not really being that caring of your citizenry. This, I think, is a good example of what we've been able to do, of what's really going to be needed in this country. I know you was given the background information. Also, if I'm not mistaken, Kansas City is the largest inland port, isn't it? Isn't it the largest or the second largest or something like that?
When BNSF planned their new intermodal in Gardner, which is very tightly related to what we've been working on in Kansas City, Kansas, they said this will be one of the biggest intermodal railroad yards in the world.
That's unbelievable. Absolutely. Unbelievable. Now, I understand just what you hear what he said. I want you to take that in the world. In the Kansas City metropolitan area.
Imports of Chinese goods are projected to grow something like 400% between 2010 and 2040. And a lot of that comes through Kansas City. A lot of that comes through Gardner. The locomotives that pull the goods in get worked on in Gardner, in Kansas City, Kansas. And as you know, Richard, that's the source of a lot of the diesel exhaust pollution.
And that's when I bring in Leticia. And the reason for that, she attended a meeting that a tour that Eric and I had actually put together. We rode around town. I mean, he turned me on to a little camera. He just set it up in the window. And we had this tour for this group that was in town for a conference. And it ended up out in Argentina at the community center for a meeting to discuss what they had just seen and what the ramifications were based on what was going on in their parts of the world and the country. And that's when this young lady, Leticia, showed up. And so I want you to understand, she came to the meeting being totally unaware of what she was about to hear. And from what she heard, the seriousness of it, she was able to take that and turn it into what I consider to be probably one of the most outstanding citizen scientist efforts that we've had in this city. So, Leticia, you want to say a little bit?
Yes, thank you, Richard. So as you said, I attended this meeting, just got an email from someone in one of our groups and said, hey, there's a group of people coming into the neighborhood and would like for you to come and meet and greet these people because they were out-of-towners. And to find out, it was a toxic tour. Interesting. So I started hearing what other cities were doing. They were talking about their pollutant impacts and their solutions. And just hearing that, I thought that was really interesting to hear. But I didn't think there was anything going on in our area till somebody said, hey, you know, if we asked our area, you know, what are the top 10 things you would be concerned about in the Argentine area? And he said, I bet you nobody would even mention the rail yard. And I thought, well, no, I'm just used to the rail yard because I've always lived next to it. So it's just my norm, and I never thought about it. But the more I learned how diesel's considered a carcinogen and the health impacts of it, that's when I realized we needed to do something about it. I couldn't just not do anything. And that's when we started getting people together and getting trainings and getting support. And it's been a little bit over 2 years that we started this, more than a year of monitoring. And this is where we are today.
You know, and again, I can't help but point out that her reaction to what she heard is what we're trying to tell you needs to be done. What we're sitting here talking about tonight could very easily be something that could affect you, if not you, someone you know, a family. And most times when the way life goes is our elderly population are the ones that are usually stuck in these communities, elderly and low income. And some of you have come from those kinds of backgrounds. So in some ways, we're talking about where your mom and them live. I think about the hexavalent chromium problem that they had over at the CertainTeed plant, at the fiberglass plant in Fairfax. You know, I mean, that happened. And hexavalent chromium is a very deadly, toxic chemical. And, you know, no one knew it. I mean, I used to think if someone knew it, maybe if some child, some son or daughter was going to bring their grandbaby over to visit mama, the grandmother, that maybe because of some warning about what was going on in that area, they would have kept them young, tender lungs away from that house. You know, I'm not saying that we'll ever be in a position to stop any of this stuff that's going on, at least the way things look. But we need to be aware of the fact that it's going on and take some corrective actions of our own. And that's kind of what this is about. So you got railway lines all over the city. We've had problems. We've had articles in the paper about the kind of chemicals that these trains are carrying, and no one's really telling us what's going through our neighborhoods. We're seeing cranes us falling off tracks and exploding all over the country. And all of that kind of stuff, when you're dealing with what's getting ready to happen in Kansas City, making it the largest goods transportation inland port in the world, could happen here. So it's scary. And it's one of those subjects that needs to be discussed. In Letitia's case, again, you go back, and like she said, she used to go to sleep, I think you said, listening to the rail trains go by.
Yeah, where I grew up, right next to it. I mean, there's just one little street right between my house and the tracks, and it would rock me to sleep.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, and then, you know, when I turned, I was about 12 years old when I moved up the hill, but I was still in between tracks.
When Eric and I was riding around getting information for the tour, I was just amazed at the little kids that would be out there in the yard playing, and I'm going, no one's really aware of the fact of what these kids are playing next to or in, the air that they're breathing, you know, and that's where our asthma comes from and a lot of our childhood diseases that they can turn into cancers and all kinds of things. So what we're doing is, I think, a valuable service to mankind. I get a lot of kudos for being the ones that organize and put this together, but Eric, I think, is the one that needs to receive the credit for having the ability to see what it was and bring it to us, because you really did. You brought that to us here.
Well, thank you, Richard.
Yeah, that was the first stop. All right, we're going to take a break, and then we're going to add another person to our roundtable here. So be back in just a second.
When do journalists choose to unleash the weaponized language of terrorism? And what effect does that have on public opinion and policy? University of Illinois professor Travis Dixon has researched media patterns on the issue. Hear what he found on Counterspin, Tuesday at 6:30 p.m.
On this week's From the Vault, we celebrate the life of Gene Ritchie, an American folk treasure who died June 1st.
And so people associate the name Gene Ritchie with old songs, and I have to tell people that when I write a song, it's because a situation comes along that has no song, and so I have to make up one. And strip mining is a fairly new thing for us, and so that I felt that there was not a song that expressed how a woman feels.
Wednesday morning at 5.
Saving water while keeping your lawn perfectly hydrated on this Current Cast. Your lawn may look dry and thirsty, but it probably needs less water than you think. Grass grows best with about 1 inch of water every 7 to 10 days, and that includes rainfall. Too much water leads to roots that are short, weak, and prone to disease and insect damage. When lawns are too wet, roots stay close to the surface instead of growing deep into the earth in search of moisture. On the other hand, when grass has the right amount of water, the roots grow longer and stronger and help lawns survive during periods of drought. So do yourself, your yard, and the environment a favor. Try a little tough love and don't overwater. Your lawn will thrive, you won't waste water, and you'll owe a whole lot less on your water bill. Support for CurrentCast comes from the Mitsubishi Corporation Foundation for the Americas. Learn more online at currentcast.org.
Okay, I'm back again. Again, I'm going to throw this number out, 816-931-5534. 816-931-5533. I never know when someone might have a hot flash and want to call to say something, as long as it's decent. So if you do, just give us a call, 816-931-5534. This next guest I have on, this is his first time. You know, it's rare, I guess it happens, that you find two very talented folks in the same family, husband and wife. But we were fortunate enough out in Argentina to do that. Stumbling up on Leticia was a jewel, and then not knowing that she had a diamond in the rough sitting at home. Her husband, Ryan DeKinney. You want to say hello, pal?
How you doing, Richard?
Yeah, this is if you saw him, you think he was somebody grew up in Pittsburgh or something. He got that Pittsburgh demeanor about it, you know, kind of rugged, kind of, you know, get into it kind of attitude.
I got some rough edges. You yes. Got
some. But in the sense of being able to tackle these concerns, finding and being able to explain what you have found is a major part of this process. And even though I brought my scientists, who will get on the phone here in a minute too, to help us out as far as being able to explain it to the neighbors, having a neighbor themselves have the ability to be able to read but the charts and dig into the internet and be able to come back and provide the kind of data in such a way that the people, his neighbors, could understand is a find. And that's what this young man has done. I want you to kind of explain to folks what it is that you did.
Okay, well, when my wife first got involved with this project, I never thought that I would as well be so involved in it. And it started with her setting up monitors, and I thought I would go ahead and help her set those up, and, you know, it'd be fun. Citizen scientists, this is cool, you know, it'll be fun. So I didn't imagine it would get to where it is, but the more and more that we set up these monitors and more of the results that came back, I started looking at them, and they were really high, and I thought, wow, this is it. It created a interest of mine, because I'm a lifelong resident of the Argentine Turner area. And as with Leticia and what Richard's been saying, I didn't think about it. I didn't know it was a problem or an issue. So when I started seeing these results and seeing that they were high, I started getting more involved and started doing more research on my own, and then looking at the research Eric and Richard and other members of the group had already had. And it's a concern. The exhaust that's coming from the yard, or any diesel exhaust at all, is very harmful to human beings. So when I found that out, I started looking into, well, is there something we can do to cut back on the exhaust, you know, coming from this area? So I did research, and yes, there are ways that we can eliminate some of the harmful pollutants coming from that area. So then I started getting more involved and tried to figure out, well, what have they been doing, you know? And we need to come together as a group to try to push more and find more answers to finding solutions to the problem, because we do have ways to decrease the emissions coming from the area.
I want to talk about the emissions. Go with me here. Okay. And if I'm not mistaken, we have Craig on the phone now. Is that right?
That's right. I'm here.
How you doing? That's Craig Val. I'm glad you called. Yeah, we got you on the line. I'm getting ready to take Ryan to the point of giving me numbers. And then I want you, Craig, if you would, to explain what those numbers mean. So you do a test. Okay. And then the test comes back from mm-hmm. the scientists that they sent it to evaluate what the data was that you received. So let's say, explain to me what it is in the numbers that you received.
Okay, when we do a test, it's over a 24-hour period in one location, and they send the sample off to a lab to get inspected, and they find a number that is associated with a low or a high reading. That number, for our purposes, range from 0 to 2. The number can go higher, but that is extremely high.
0 to 2.
0 to 2 is what is for the purpose of this.
And
what
study. You're getting a number on is what?
Is the amount of diesel particulate matter, parts per million. Craig, can you help me out on this one?
Craig, explain particulate matter.
Well, these are some very fine particles. It's just a characteristic of diesel pollution that it's the finest of all particles. It's 0.1 micron in size, which is so tiny that you couldn't possibly see it. And yet their being so tiny is what allows them to actually get into your bloodstream along with the riders that ride along with it, which are because this carbon in there adsorbs toxic gases and materials that are known to cause problems. It can get into your bloodstream, and so that's why the finest particles are the most dangerous.
And see, it sounds scary to me. Okay, Ryan. So here you got your area of extremes.
Yes.
Zero
being, you know, no detection of diesel particulate, and 2 being extremely high.
Okay.
So when we got our test back, the limit for exposure was set by, I think, the EPA.
Okay.
0.838 is at a point where health effects start showing up in neighborhoods, cardiovascular and breathing problems and things like that. And so anything above 0.838 is considered harmful. And our testing showed, of the 22 tests that we've done, our testing shows that 45% of our tests were above that limit.
Okay. All right, now, because we got time, I have to cut it. Okay, Craig, we get 45% of our numbers are above what's considered a dangerous level. What is that saying?
Well, these are not actually EPA standards. The Citizens Global Monitoring group that trained Leticia and allowed us and gave us the instruments had a well-recognized expert, Mark Chernoff, who gave us these numbers, which he got from some recent studies done by universities, basically correlating these levels of what they call elemental carbon. It's a marker for diesel with health effects. One of the studies was in six counties of California, and another was nationwide with 106 counties where they correlated these pollutant levels with health effects. And the health effects, so these are what you might call acute health effects. These are things that if you get exposed to, you can have an instant reaction to, like an asthma attack, or 2 days later you may end up in the hospital with a heart attack. So these are the acute effects that this expert developed for us. And some of the numbers were as high as 1.8 in that scale of 0 to 2.
Okay.
When you ask me again, I'll basically tell you what were some of the lessons we learned from looking at the data as a whole.
Okay, we'll have to do that at a different time when we're able to just zero in on that, because I want people to understand this listening. And I got to make sure we get to our ass, and I got about another 4 minutes or so that I have to deal with this, right? So I got to watch that. Okay, we did the testing. We got the figures. We had 45% was in what we consider to be dangerous areas. So this is the information that we gave to the citizens. First, we gave it to the railroad letter. Well, we really didn't. We told them we were going to be giving this to the citizen and invited them, made them welcome to come here themselves. And I think we did send them something, right?
Yes.
So they do have it. Okay, so now we got that. And this is the person who's missing is Judy Ansel. She was the person, and if y'all know Judy, you can just imagine her bringing an ass. She would bring an ass like it's supposed to be ass. And that's exactly what she did. There's no ifs, ands, or buts about it. And we had got together as a team and kind of come up with what it was we wanted to do. So Eric is going to fill in for her and explain what it was we wanted the railroad to do.
The beautiful part about this process, I think, was that these requests were put together by the people that live there, Argentine Turner Good Neighbor Committee. And there's four requests developed by the committee, one of them by Ryan, sitting right next to me. Number one, most of, real quick explanation, much of the pollution is coming from the locomotive maintenance facility where locomotives, lots of them, are tested and run outdoors at high RPMs. So all that pollution can just blow into the neighborhood. Number one request, build a building over that area, which has sometimes dozens of locomotives. Do the work inside, put air handlers and scrubbers on the roof, keep the pollution on your own property. Don't let it go into the neighbors. Number two, develop a plan to move towards zero emissions beyond their fence line. Within 3 years, part of that is within 3 years, have more efficient and cleaner locomotives. They run really old locomotives as switch engines, and they're pretty dirty. Number three, install a real-time fence line monitoring system. And number four, keep the Good Neighbor Committee involved and informed about what's going on.
Okay. Now, see, that is what this group was able to do the other night, and I was just very pleased with what they have put together and how they had presented them. Now, those asks we had presented to the railroad before they had a chance to see the final results of the test. Now work with me here, folks. We're talking citizens being able to take that kind of a program or approach with a major corporation and end up receiving front page news out of it. That's the whole key. I mean, that's a victory. As far as I'm concerned, that's just as much as it was for the Sierra Club to be able to get those coal-fired plants closed down and working off of natural gas. That's a major victory when you stop and think about it. And it's what's needed in this country that we're working in. Okay. I'm going to let you expound a little bit on that closed-in building. I got a minute coming up, so I'm going to go ahead and take this break now and then come back. When I come back, I want you to just talk a little bit about that building and what that means. Eric said something good about keep your own air in your own place, so I want you to talk about that.
90.1 FM, Kansas City Community Radio, wants to give thanks to our sustaining givers. By being a sustaining donor, you get the satisfaction and convenience of making a monthly contribution to your community radio station. This saves cost, which puts more of your contribution into the news and music programs that you love. To become a sustaining giver, please contact Warren at 816-994-7871. And thanks again from the staff and volunteers at KKFI 90.1 FM.
On the next Bioneers.
Y hoy se ha mencionado y se sigue mencionando y se replica por todas partes.
Today we hear very much about the movement for sustainable food. And it's a tremendous vision that can and will work.
Pero, ¿dónde están derechos humanos para los trabajadores que producen?
But where are the human rights of the farm workers that harvest these products and also the small farmers that are also suffering these conditions?
Friday morning at 9:30 a.m.
All right, gang, I'm back. We got something like about 7 minutes left here. And what I want my folks that's involved, I want each one of them to take a minute or so here just to express how it feels to achieve what we were able to achieve. Craig, since you're not here, I'm going to start with you out there on the phone, and I'll let you go ahead and be able to get off and listen to us, okay?
Okay, fine, thanks. I wanted to make one important point about this particular location, and it pretty much just leaped out to me from this data that they are very much subject to temperature inversions. They are in the Kansas River Valley, and what the data showed was that some of the highest values that were monitored were on days when there was calm winds or very low winds, which are characteristic of temperature inversions. That's when a layer of cold air prevents the vertical convection or vertical mixing of the pollution. So it just builds up under this roof, you might say a roof of cold air. And the data was very clear that this is one of the main reasons why there's a problem here. And this problem, what happens is the pollution just builds up and then diffuses laterally out into the neighborhood in all directions. So this is, in my opinion, the biggest reason why we need to do something about this problem. It is not going to go away because of this particular geographical characteristic of the BNSF yard.
All right, thank you, Craig. I appreciate you calling in, or us calling you, and as you know, I appreciate your walking with us. It's a tremendous help for all of us when we're in trouble and we have to turn to somebody. We go, where's Craig?
Definitely, just like I did.
Thank you, Craig, so much.
I appreciate it.
I'm real proud of this group for all the careful work they did, and I think it was very credible.
All right, sir. Thank you. All right. Bye-bye. Coming to you, Ryan. Bye-bye.
Do you want me to what do you want me to discuss?
Yes, your minute, whatever you feel comfortable with discussing.
Okay, it's important to note that we also care about the workers who are in the yard, and I want them to be just as safe and healthy as the people who live in the surrounding area. So this is for them too, right? And we hope that we can continue this relationship with BNSF and EPA and KDHE and work to create solutions to our problem.
Tisha?
Richard, so I just want to say when I first got involved, I was always told, you'll never get a meeting with BNSF. So that, first of all, was an accomplishment, you know. But just to being able to educate the community, there's a lot of people who are now aware of what's going on, and they're able to, you know, just see what's going on and be cautious about what they're doing, but, you know, still be able to enjoy life. So, you know, my goal is to help the community with quality of life. We do have healthy people around, and I want to keep it to where everybody can be healthy and enjoy life, have quality. So.
Okay, Eric, I'm going to let you kind of say something about where we go from here.
To me, this is all about empowerment. With tools and knowledge and good communications, people can take a lot better care of themselves and their neighbors. And we've got a really good start here. Right now, the decision's in BNSF's hands. If they want to be a good neighbor, to paraphrase the name of this committee, they can. All the tools that are needed to clean this pollution up are here. They all exist. They're all being used in other places. Very, very doable. What needs to happen is the community needs to stay engaged. More people need to get involved because a lot of decisions that get made in the end are political decisions. These guys have done fantastic work and set the foundation for doing that. I'm really optimistic.
Yeah, I am too. I you know, I don't need to say a whole lot because these people have really said it all. I'm still talking in terms of saying what they have done in Argentine and Turner needs to be done in your neighborhood too. I don't care if you're Midtown, or if you live in the Northeast area over there with my good friend Jeff Humphill. I mean, those are areas where you have just regular people that are living in the midst of industrial soot and all kinds of circumstances that basically, as Leticia said, they had no idea that I'd be able to get a meeting with BNSF. But here it is now. Not only did we get a meeting with them, I think we put them in a bad light. And that wasn't what we were trying to do, but they actually did it themselves, because if you read that newspaper article, you'll see that they didn't come to the meeting. And it was, and they were invited. And it was, they were, you, them not being there made a difference. I think it showed. And it showed that they was concerned about being placed in a position where something like that would happen. All right, gang, I'm back. I hope that you see that I'm coming back with just the same types of programs and subject matters that I always bring to you, where when I get ready to get off the line, you can definitely say you have learned. So I'm turning it over, buddy.
Thank you, Richard. This is Mike Murphy with your calendar of events. Sierra Club New Member Fair. At the Sierra Club New Member Fair, all are invited to find out about the Sierra Club and learn how to get involved. The event will be held at 6:45. Oh, that's an old message there. That's an old, never mind that one. Okay, Protecting the Waterways of Johnson County, July 2nd at 6:15. Learn why 40% of the nation's waterways are unfit for swimming and what citizens can help to do about local waterways of Johnson County. Kristen Rio, Executive Director of Bridging the Gap, will speak and explain the concept of watersheds and how to find the one you live in and why so many are polluted. The Village Church Environmental Action Committee has sponsored this event. This event will begin at 6:15 on Thursday, July 2nd, that's this Thursday, at Village Presbyterian Church at 6641 Mission Road in Prairie Village, Kansas. It includes a pizza and salad dinner that begins at 6. Registration is requested, but walk-ins will be welcomed. You can contact Marion Weber at 913-671-2333 or Marianne, that's Marianne, at villagepres.org. That's villageprez.org. And again, Marianne's phone number is 913-671-2333. We're going to go out as we've been doing every week with This Week in Water. Thanks to our guests for coming in today, and thanks to Richard Mabian and Natural E for helping to make such a fine program.
Has the check engine light come on for the Colorado River? That and other stories for the week ending June 28th, 2015.
I'm Jamie Sudler.
I'm Franny Halperin, and it's This Week in Water.
Lake Mead is one of a number of reservoirs on the Colorado River, and last week water levels there dropped lower than they have ever been since 1937, when the reservoir started filling. The drop is seen by most as a result of a sustained regional drought that started last century.
It won't be known for a while whether the lake levels will stay so low. If it does, then water deliveries to some farmers in Arizona irrigation districts could be curtailed starting in 2016. The odds are quite high that cutoffs from the Colorado will occur the following year, 2017.
Luckily, this past May and early June saw unusually high snowfall and rain upriver in the state of Colorado. An official with the Colorado River Conservation District is predicting that more than twice the amount of water will flow into the river than what was earlier thought, which is good news for California, Nevada, and Arizona.
However, some are noting that this temporary relief should not put the 40 million people who depend on the river at ease. Drew Beckwith of Western Resource Advocates told the Arizona Republic that the low level in Lake Mead is analogous to a car's check engine light coming on, and that drought or no drought, the Colorado River is already over-allocated. Two articles came out last week describing how man-made global warming intensifies storms.
First, in 2013, in a remote area of the Indian Himalayas, as many as 5,000 people died when heavy rainfall caused a natural lake to burst, destroying roads, bridges, and carrying off herds of animals.
At first, the cause of the devastation was thought to be early monsoons and poor building design. But various studies reviewed last week by Daniel Grossman for Yale 360 have shown that global warming was likely a contributing factor to the flooding that ravaged the village of Kedarnath.
Heavy rains have occurred in the area again last week, and on Friday, the government of the province in which Kedarnath lies launched rescue operations to save thousands of pilgrims who had been stranded.
In another study published this past week, scientists concluded that human-caused global warming worsened flooding that occurred in 2013 along the Front Range of Colorado and in Superstorm Sandy in the east.
The rains in Colorado in September 2013 dumped more than 9 inches of water in less than 24 hours and a total of 17 inches in a week.
The report notes that it's important to focus on the changed underlying thermodynamics, higher sea surface temperatures, and more atmospheric water vapor that can supercharge the weather systems that do form.
As we reported last week, Pope Francis issued his encyclical on climate change, emphasizing that the problem is urgent and calling for a new dialogue about how we are shaping the future of our planet.
That pontification on global warming has gotten climate deniers a little hot under the collar about the prospect of a deal at the UN conference coming up this December in Paris.
In a fundraising letter leaked to the Guardian newspaper, the so-called godfather of climate denial warns that a United Nations deal on global warming would spell economic suicide for America and a disaster to the world.
In the rambling 13-page letter, Fred Singer, a retired scientist, appeals for money to stop the climate pact and accuses President Obama of embarking on a, quote, anti-energy regulatory jihad.
The appeal was penned on behalf of the Committee for a Constructive Tomorrow, or CFACT, a little-known ultra-conservative group that denies the existence of climate change and whose executive director called the pastoral letter Rome's greatest scientific blunder since Galileo.
A more visible climate change skeptic is Governor Rick Scott of Florida, who's been accused of forbidding government employees to use the terms climate change and global warming, a charge his office denies.
The Florida Center for Investigative Reporting looked into the controversy and compared the independent Florida Fish and Wildlife Conservation Commission with Florida Department of Environmental Protection, an agency that reports directly to the governor.
They found that prior to Scott's election, the Department of Environmental Protection was aggressively studying climate change. When Scott took office in 2011, the terms climate change and global warming began to disappear from reports.
Additionally, former Department of Environmental Protection employees described meetings and emails in which they were ordered not to use the terms. Department officials instructed employees and volunteers to stay away from the subjects.
Meanwhile, last week, Governor Scott vetoed funds to replace a marine vessel that had been in use for more than 40 years doing ocean research.
The ship, operated by the Florida Institute of Oceanography, monitored red tide, analyzed coral in the Keys, and studied oily water after the Deepwater Horizon spill.
And finally this week, given all the news on climate, it's possible that you're left with this burning question about global warming. What do mermaids think about rising sea levels? Or ocean acidification?
Up until recently, we didn't know. But last week, a crackerjack reporter from The Guardian tracked down the elusive creatures and found out, well, that they're crabby. See the original interviews through a link at our website, h2oradio.org.
This Week in Water is a production of H2O Radio and is sponsored by Colorado WaterWise. Learn more at coloradowaterwise.org.
Thanks for listening to Eco Radio KC on 90.1 FM KKFI, Kansas City Community Radio.